Welcome, everybody, to the Har B'Chukosai in the year 5770. We have just engaged in a little bit of pre-class conversation, which has, unbeknownst to the participants, led us right into the class. The term suffering, using adversity to as a catalyst to come close to God, being open to that, reward and consequences can be a major impetus for growth and realization if you're willing. These types of ideas is really what the Parsha is trying to drive home to the Jewish people. In the double Parsha, B'Chukosai, the second one, contains one of the two sections of Tochacha, or admonishment, that the Torah has. Chapter 27, and it's well known that it is something which is a little difficult, not 27, 26. It's a little difficult to read for some people. Even tradition has it that the Torah reader reads it quickly. There are no breaks, you can't stop an aliyah in the middle of the admonition. It's hard to read because God basically says in no uncertain terms that your life will be pleasant bountiful and fruitful if you adhere to my commandments and my ways, and if you don't, life will be a living hell. And, we kind of cringe when we hear that. Now, some two very noble people that we have here have stated that they have found adversity, at least in personal life, to be a catalyst for growth. But I think we will all realize that many people don't approach it that way, and they don't have that openness or awakeness or willingness. And we learned last week, the Chovetz HaLevavos, Rabbi Bachya ben Pekuda, that this is one of the three obstacles to real faith. Let me just recap. I mean, let me recap. We have really embarked since Pesach on a mini trip to try to deepen our understanding and knowledge of what faith in God means and how it is acquired, how it is obtained. I think that our most up-to-date conclusion based on Rabbi Bachya is that the most effective and the most direct way to do that is through what he calls Bechina, reflection on creation. It is whereby a Jew, not delving into philosophy so much, but just observing the manifestation of God's presence in the world based on his own experience, his own senses. And most blatantly within the human body and just one's own self-experience. That is the most direct way to discover and to deepen one's faith. Even though it is so accessible, it is so easy to sense it with one's own experience, still people neglect to do that. And he gave us three reasons why. Reason number one was because, I mean, Bechina is all predicated on the fact that we behold God's favors and goodness and kindness in what he does, right? It's supposed to impress us. It's supposed to win us over. Wow, look what God did for me. But that's assuming that we have that positive outlook. Well, human nature is such that we're never satisfied with what we have. We always think that the glass is half empty. I'm not saying everybody, peasant company excluded, but it is common human nature. And therefore, when we get something, we don't think of it necessarily as, wow, thank you for what you did did for me, we think of what we don't have. So we therefore may lose that opportunity to behold the goodness of God, just because we're not looking for it. The second reason, related also to human nature, is that we are so accustomed to seeing all the favors that we just take them for granted. We don't even notice them. Again, present company excluded. Many people do this, but it is something that one has to work at and develop, that ability to appreciate. The third is that a person has difficulties with all of the adversity in life. And they say, no, come on. It's not a question of opening my eyes and noticing. That's bad. People are suffering. People are hurting. They're hungry. They're starving. They're sick. They're dying. There's atrocities. There's evil people that are allowed to get away with things. This can't possibly be good. And how can you tell me that God has created a wonderful world? And that's a blockade for us. Now, we're supposed to believe that everything is for the good, but we certainly don't see how readily, without turning it over to God and just, well, I'll trust you. But that's a very big hurdle. So I really wanted to kind of pick up where we left off, because these are real issues. These obstacles are real obstacles. And we kind of wanted to get to a point where we see how to acquire faith, and yet we have these obstacles. And particularly, I think, the third one. Now, the first one and the second one, people won't really debate you on it. If you say to somebody, come on, just appreciate all the good that you have, you know, if you get them to stop and to think, I think they'll kind of agree. You know, and if you tell them, don't just go through life without thinking, you know, open your eyes, realize, say Moda Ani, thank Hashem for the fact that you're alive today. You know, look at the newspaper. There's some people that didn't wake up this morning. I think you'll get a person to agree. But if you say to somebody, everything that God does is for the best, mm-hmm. and he doesn't really believe that, how do you get past that? How do you get past that blockade? Well, just have faith. But you're trying to convince me why I should have faith with an argument that I can't buy. So we are really at an impasse. And we need to get closure in this.
One more variable.
Yes.
One more variable is that God, we know that God hates negativity and kvetching. If you remember that, that can stop you from being negative and seeing the glass as half empty.
Again, that can help number one and number two. I think that number one and number two are surmountable with just some convincing, some pep talking. But number three is a hard one. So, enters Parshas Bechukosai and says, well, we're going to use scare tactics to get you to believe in this stuff. Because if you do, everything will be good. And if you don't, we're all going to live a life of suffering. Or so the Torah claims. But that's trying to fight fire with fire. You know, you're throwing it more of it at me. And I have a hard time accepting this. So I am going to go out on a limb today, and I'm going to look for an alternative to the Tochacha in the Torah. We're going to find another Tochacha. We're going to find a different admonition that maybe will speak to us. See, disclaimer here. When it all boils down to it, faith, belief in God, is really, really a matter of your own will and desire. If you don't will it, there's nothing that will convince you. It's got to really come within your heart. All we can do as students of Torah and of Judaism is try our best to find answers that will satisfy us, that will inspire us. But, you know, in the final analysis, we just have to be big boys and girls, and we just have to decide if we are willing to go here. But I think, if I may be reverently irreverent, that the Tochacha in the Torah may not speak to us, and I'll tell you why. Because I believe that the Torah is is written to an audience that it accepts the purpose of life and accepts the concept of Olam Haba. And we're here as a passing through a hallway to get to the next world. And that's our job. And we know we're going there, and we know that we are going to there's another stage of existence after this. But, you know, the human condition is weak and frail, and we sometimes need a kick in the pants. So the Tocha comes along and says, you know, if you give incentive to anyone, to a child, you know, if you perform well, you'll get a reward, and if you don't, you'll get a consequence. This is not the ultimate. Of course, the ultimate is in the world to come, but it's something that kind of motivates us in the here and now. But what about a generation like ours, where all of us, to a large degree, we lack even the premise. We weren't brought up with our those who we look to for guidance were telling us we're here to serve Hashem, to go to the world to come, and we're here to connect with Him through Torah and mitzvos, and that's why we're here. We so many of us lack that. And so whatever the Torah says, it's kind of like, oh, I don't even know if I believe the Torah. So therefore, we have to look for other things, for any thought, any words of inspiration, of insight that may be able to motivate us. Because that's the bottom line. If we want to have faith in God, we have to have the will. So, I'd like to present to you something which I learned right in this Sefer. And it spoke to me, so I will speak to you what spoke to me. And I would love your reaction. One way to inspire is through a mashal, an analogy. Something that we identify with as being very human, down to earth. And then we, after getting the analogy very well, then we try to use our imagination and our minds to extrapolate from that to things which are more spiritual, more abstract. So Rabbi Bachya, who employs many mashalim, by the way, and so did King Shlomo, I mean, mashalim have been used by, you know, for time immemorial by our sages. He gives the analogy of two brothers who their father passed away and left them each a large tract of land which was totally uncultivated. And these two brothers at the present time have no savings, and the land, they cannot get anything out of the land because the land is totally fallow. So what they have to figure out is what they're going to do for the long term and what they're going to do for the short term. And there's some scheduling issues, because to make a living for the short term, you have to go out and work, and you don't have so much time to tend and develop your land. So, anyways, they get to work. The two of them divide the land, and shortly we can see that the two brothers each have a different approach. There is the wise brother and the foolish brother. Okay, the sensible one realizes that if he worked exclusively on his land, his plot of land, he would be unable to make a living and support himself. So, what does he do? He hires himself out as a day laborer and works on other people's fields. And in doing so, he's able to make enough money to live day to day. He's got to work a whole day, that's what his employer asks. But there's usually an hour or so when the day is over on his way home that he can do a little work on his field, and he does it with intensity and vigor, as much as he can, even though it's not a lot. Once in a while, he has saved up a little extra, a few coins from his day job, and he is able to say, I'll take the day off, and I'll spend an entire day working on my field. And that's a very profitable day. Eventually, he can save up a little more, do 2 days. Eventually, after several years, he has properly cultivated his land. He started to seed it. And what a happy day it was when he harvested his first crop from his land, and he did not have to do his other work for an entire year. And during that year, of course, he put he put all of it, his time into his land. He planted more trees, and again got to the point where not only was he fully self-sufficient from the land, but he was now making a profit, and he could buy more land, and you know the end of the story. Now let's visit the foolish brother. The foolish brother realizes that he's got to go to work. And so he's hired himself out, and he works a long day, brings home his earnings, and he decides he doesn't really have much free time. But he's got to work now. This is what I've got to do. If he's got a little extra time, so he relaxes a little bit, he goes on an excursion, takes a little day off. Does he ever go to his field? No, I don't have time for that. That will have to wait. Well, it goes on like that, and before you know it, his field starts to get overgrown. Weeds, thorns, the fence that was in good order when the father was alive is now broken. Floodwaters come, and you know the end of that story. Pretty soon he has no land left. That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? What is the comparison? So the nimshal is that the land is really us. We come into this world and we're a beautiful tract of uncultivated land. It could be worth millions, but right now it's totally fallow. It has to be developed. We can't just come into this world and spend all of our time developing ourselves spiritually and neglecting the here and now, the needs for making a living and for being involved in this world, because this world requires that. And so we all have to have some other occupation. But the question is, are we only putting all of our time into our this worldly existence? What about developing ourselves as this potential cultivatable land, which is really the spirit? What about developing that? If we don't put some time into it, maybe just a little time at the beginning, if we don't put any time, we're going to go through 120 years with many, many pay stubs to show for ourselves. But meanwhile, the field has not been cultivated. Whereas if we put a little time, we say, yes, I've got my this worldly existence, I've got to attend to that, but I will spend, take away time, and I will spend it on developing myself spiritually. And if you do that, it just grows and grows and grows. It can come to the point, he says, where the more a person spends time on his spiritual needs, the more time he will find to do so. And he will find that God helps him to even ease some of his burdens for the temporal, because God is supporting him. And that's really what the Parsha was saying. If you, according to the Rambam, the Parsha is saying exactly this. If you keep the commandments, I will bless you so much that you won't have to work so hard. And then you can continue doing even more commandments. But if you are not using your time wisely, and you're only taking care of the temporal, well, I'm going to make it not work for you. And then hopefully, one day, you're going to realize that this is not what you should be spending your every waking hour doing. And you will realize that you were here for a different purpose. That's really, this mashal is really what the Tochacha is saying. However, this is bringing out the point of Olam Haba. This is bringing out the point, the more basic point that we're not really, many of us lacked, is why are we here? Yes, everyone has to work. Everyone has to be involved in the here and now, in the temporal, but we have a more noble purpose. And you know, this is not an attempt to criticize. This is an attempt to encourage. We all have this land, and let us develop it. You know, I mentioned just before class started, Chana mentioned Rabbi Victor Miller, and a student of his wrote a little book about appreciating Hashem, and that book was written by, the student was my cousin, Rabbi Moshe Goldberger, who, my first cousin, a bit older than I am. And he's from a family of 13 siblings, Bliya and Hara. And this past week, one of the 13 passed away. A girl cousin of mine, same age as me. And after a long illness. We were, unfortunately for this reason, but we got connected with our cousins this week, all of my siblings, and it was actually quite nice that we did, because life is busy. But my sister had been speaking with the oldest of the family, a girl, and she happened to be with the her sister when she passed away. And although she was in a hospital room, and you know, she had been suffering, but she said that when it came time to the end, all of a sudden she became peaceful. And I don't know all the details, but she said just a sense of peace came upon her. She even smiled, and then she closed her eyes and it was gone. And you know, I was thinking about all of these ideas, it's sad, but it's kind of a nice ending. You know, who knows? But this young lady, who raised 7 children, and she suffered a lot, but I believe that she saw where she was going, and she saw at the end of this life that she had this beautiful parcel of developed land that she had built, that she had cultivated, and she knew she was going to it. And you know, after 120 years, God willing, everyone should be healthy and live long and robust years, but we're all going to get to the point one day where we're going to be moving on. And we also want to have somewhere to go and to have a beautiful parcel of land. and to have that peace when we leave. And I just would like to add, you know, this is for just my own observation, that, you know, I don't usually speak so explicitly, but developing the land, you know, is a process that was written by God. And it's not always enough to say, well, I developed the land, you know, in my way. God told us, gave us instructions how to plow, how to sow, how to reap, what kind of plants to plant. And we have to be wise, and we have to realize that, you know, as Rabbi Weinberg teaches us, Hashem is absolute, and His truth is the truth. And like Rabbi Lefkowitz said, he says, we can all believe in God. He says, but I bless you that you should be successful and that you should accept the basic tenets of Judaism and the mitzvos. He says we should all keep Shabbos and we should all keep kashrus. And there are many, you know, there are other a few basic mitzvos that we have to accept as part of the rules that God says. And these are basics in terms of cultivating the land. So let us be wise and let us cultivate our land, but let's do it the right way, the way that God said. And this is really the bottom line. The bottom line of everything is that we have to have the will. We have to make a resolution to do what's right, the way God said. And we really, you know, here's where I was going with, if we have problems, if we say, well, I have an obstacle, I can't accept it because X, Y, or Z, we kind of have to say, I realize you have these questions, but come on, which brother do you want to be like? You know, in the final analysis, do you want to be the wise brother or do you want to be the foolish brother? So put your, you know, questions aside for a minute and just look at yourself in the mirror and say, which brother do I want to be like? And how do I want to, you know, look forward when the time comes? This is my own adapted version of the Tochacha. I don't think that the Torah is disagreeing with this. I just think that maybe we need an extra dose of, you know, why are we here? The world around us says everything but this. The world around us is basically praising the foolish brother and saying, don't worry about the hereafter. Just enjoy yourself here. Build what you can here. Get a good job. You know, build yourself up. Get as much acquisition, as much fame as you can. That's what it's all about. We have to realize that the world around us are filled with the foolish brothers. We, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, we are the chosen people. We have the secret. They don't. So let us conclude the book of Vayikra. I also want to mention that it's very likely that I will not be here next Friday for reasons I cannot disclose at the moment. But this may be our conclusion of our little project of Emuna before continuing on after Shavuos with Tefillah. So this, my intention was to make this kind of like the end of that project, and hopefully the Tochacha will really put the seal as we reflect. Let us reflect in this manner as well. Okay, Perry.
Rabbi, Tochacha is a rebuke, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I thought you said that you were going to find another Tochacha other than this one.
Well, this...
So where is that?
This, I think this is the other one. Because, you see,
well,
Torah doesn't say anything about Olam Haba.
But you're reading it a different way. Is
well... I'm saying that the Torah doesn't say explicitly Olam Haba because it's assuming that everybody knows it. and we just need a little bit of the incentive to kind of keep us in line. But I said today, so many people don't even have that as a basic premise. So our tochacha has to emphasize that a little more.
Our tochacha,
we have to speak to our generation more explicitly and say that, you know, we're here for a reason. We are moving on to Olam Haba, and even though the Chumash doesn't say that explicitly, we've got to say it.
Oh,
it's not a conflict, but we know that if you look throughout the Chumash, it just talks about this world, and it doesn't say explicitly, you know, Olam Haba. I think it's because the Torah is assuming that we all have that orientation, but we cannot take that for granted in our times. So our tochacha has to add that. Yes.
In Tanakh, in Shlomo, it doesn't make reference to a hallway. So a hallway does have a beginning and also has an opening, you know, both, you know, the beginning and the end. So perhaps we can see a connection with that. And perhaps also it's this physical world that allows us to create a conscious and survival, loving relationship with God, so that it has an opportunity to continue that. And I'm looking at just the reverse, you know, of the not doing,
the
consequence.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is the upside versus
the
downside?
Yeah.
Not just to have for ourselves, but the door by door for the next generations to come, and to be a self-assured, self-assured community.
Doctor?
You've taught us so well, Rabbi, how to draw closer to Hashem, several different ways. And one is through the contemplation of nature. And the film that you showed us, two short films last week, they were both good. The first one made a deep impression on me, where the rabbi was explaining to the children the anatomy of an apple, and that there were seeds in it, and the seeds could grow into trees without consuming anything visible, such as the earth around them. And that speaks to the creative force in the world, as powerful as any message I've ever heard or seen. And, of course, have a creative force, you have to have a creator.
Right.
And one needs no more.
Well,
that message.
Thank you so much. And I don't know if you caught this, but the second film, the older rabbi, he said, tell me if you remember this, that the doctors, the professors, the researchers should be leading the nation in belief in God. Did you catch that?
Yes.
Because they know better than anyone else.
Well, the message, I didn't hear it quite that way, but personally, as a physician,
he didn't say your name, but
studying medicine, which is very complex and very challenging and not at all easy, but you get a sense of awe from seeing how the body is created, and there's so much research papers and people focus on the latest chazarai, but they don't ask, you know, who created all of this.
Right.
So I get satisfaction from seeing nature through a physician's eyes, for sure. And I'd like to create a misapprehension that occurred a couple of months ago. Someone said that I believe that my belief in God was based on the act of birth, which is not correct. My belief in God is based on a creative force in the world, which that film said so explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, someone in this class?
Yes.
I hope it wasn't me, because if it was, I didn't say that.
Well, it was a misapprehension of what I actually felt. That is, you know, birth is a miracle in its own way, but it's the creation of life.
Yeah.
It's the creation of life.
You could speak about the birth.
What I
had
said, actually, in reference, that was not the birth itself, but the baby being born, seeing the universe in front of it.
That's right.
You're caught in the world,
I don't know
the universe.
I don't know if that was...
That was last week.
No, it was several weeks ago we did this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I think that's a different. That's a different incident.
I don't want to put any negative message in this because the positive is so powerful that the creation is all around us.
Yeah.
But it can also enhance your belief when you see something that's so overwhelmingly magnificent, like what you're saying about nature. Mm-hmm. When you see a baby being born, that enhances your belief because you know that this couldn't be. This from a child born from a person. It's just that's what is so miraculous. So it's not wrong to feel that it enhances your belief.
We have a great show.
You know, I wanted to say something else.
Please. Thank you, Arthur.
Thank you.
I was listening to Rabbi Kersner on a tape about Tehillim. I believe this is where it came from. And he was talking about...
the Rabbi Kersner from here, or the late Rabbi Kersner?
The late Rabbi Kersner.
Yeah. So the Art of Jewish Prayer, he authored.
He wrote that, right.
Yeah.
So this was on Tehillim, though. And one of the things he said was that it used to be that that Abraham learned about God's existence from nature. But after Abraham, today, once we got the Torah, we choose the Torah over that learning.
Right.
So this book goes back and says it should be through nature. And also the same when somebody's walking along the road, the Talmud supposedly says if you're learning Torah, you're not supposed to stop and look at that beautiful tree. So I never understood that. So what he explained here was because you're learning Torah, that should take precedence over looking at the beautiful tree.
Right.
But this book that you have really says different. It says you should do it from nature.
Right. But... do you have an answer for this? You know, when I hear something interesting, I think about that too.
It also tells us not to talk about Torah because you won't be able to see the thieves. Don't you remember when they were going back, Yosef?
Oh yeah, well, yeah. Don't speak about the Torah when you're traveling. Oh, good point. Very good point. Guess what?
Don't take something
light. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a couple of things. First of all, Rabbi Bachya says that the source for our knowledge of God is multifaceted. It's the written Torah, the oral tradition, and it's the mind. I thought there was one other thing. Or I mentioned that there was an inborn faith that we have. So I think that the Bechina that he's referring to is that aspect of using the mind. It's not to the exclusion of the Torah and of the tradition. But we are supposed to also use our God-given intellect. The question is, what should we use our intellect for? Should we use our intellect to probe the philosophical analysis of God, of theology, or should we use our mind just to think about the world around us? So I don't think he's coming. Rabbi Bachya, for sure, is not coming to exclude the study of Torah. And just to add a little bit of icing to that, everything that we're discussing right now here is Torah. Torah's chovas halavavas. In other words, everything that we do is from Torah. Anytime we sit down and have a discussion, we're really discussing Torah concepts. So even the thought of going out and observing through nature is Torah, because it's the Torah that told us to do that. Right. So we're covered.
Might it also depend on how you look at the nature? I mean, if you're looking at the nature just to enjoy it yourself, and this is something that hit my son heavily. He loves the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And one rabbi asked him one time, why do you love the outdoors?
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't articulate
mm-hmm.
it. And the rabbi said, think about it carefully, especially if you can't articulate it. It might be a vodazara.
Mm.
And so if we're looking at nature
mm-hmm.
as just a personal feel-good wow,
mm-hmm.
then that's probably the kind of nature that you aren't supposed to mm-hmm. get into. But if you're looking at nature to see, I want to understand Hashem through what
right.
He's made, then that puts nature in the category of Torah.
And you can never do that unless you have a Torah source, unless you are learning from here, unless you have a teacher who pointed that out to you. You wouldn't get there just by looking at nature. So
but
even
what's
the
wrong with just looking at nature?
Because you may not find God, because you may not know that that's what you're supposed to be looking for.
Wait, what's wrong with doing both? Can't you possibly just explore, enjoy, or study nature,
of course,
the natural world,
yeah,
explore and study and examine the spiritual
yeah.
world? Can't you do both?
So that is a question that Dr. Brickman will remember well. The discussion we had many years ago when our teacher, source of our so much of our faith and knowledge, Rabbi Weinberg, after he passed away some 12 years ago or so, there was a Shabbos with all of his students who got together, and one of the advanced students got up there and said, let me summarize it, who our teacher was. He says, there's three different approaches to the spiritual and the physical. One is that there's two different worlds. There's the spiritual and there's the physical world. And the spiritual world is good and the physical world is bad. Okay, remember this? That's one approach. The second approach agrees that there are two different worlds, but this approach says the spiritual world is good and the physical world is good. And then the third approach, which is the approach of our Rebbe, said, what do you mean there's two worlds? There's only one world.
Wow.
It's God's world. So I don't know if that answers your question, but this is how we were taught. And
well, what you're saying is, if you're going to study quantum mechanics, then you're studying Torah. Or are you saying that?
It depends on your approach.
Well,
I'm advocating. If it's one world, then you will. The quantum mechanics will bring you to Torah, and the Torah will bring you to quantum mechanics.
Well, right, okay.
But if you insist that there are two different worlds, then that's where you get into that.
Does you ever say the same rabbi told my son, asked my son that same year, what are you doing this summer? So my son was very nervous about it because he was going hiking. We were going out to the west. And so he didn't know how this rabbi was going to
uh-huh.
He didn't understand what the rabbi was saying exactly the first time.
Right.
He said, so my son said, we're going to spend 2 weeks out at Glacier, whatever. And he said, well, do yourself a favor. Do not take a camera. Go out and enjoy every minute of it, but don't take pictures. You're going to miss half of what you want to see. So it wasn't even against it,
right.
But how you approach it is all important. If you look at a flower and say, oh, it's a beautiful flower, one person can say that. The other person looks at the flower and says, look how beautiful the petals are. Look how symmetric they are. Look, there's a Fibonacci number. You know, this follows. There's so many different ways of
mm-hmm.
looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
And you say at the end, this just happened.
Right.
No.
Right.
God,
take a photographer with you.
But you don't
take
you don't take the pictures, but make sure you get it. Very good.
You can.
What happened? I think. What's his name? It'll come to me in a minute. Baruch Spinoza.
Uh-huh.
Baruch Spinoza. He might have been a good guy or a bad guy, but he said that God and nature are one and the same, and he got in a lot of trouble for that. Is God and nature one and the same, or is God and nature not
you,
one and the same?
You can't judge a person by a line that he says. He probably if he got into trouble, it was probably more than just for saying that line. You know?
Well,
in other words,
a person,
that's why I say that when we go to build our field, when we go to plant our field, we have to follow certain rules. You know, God's the farmer, so he says, you know, you have to accept this and follow that, and you gotta be in the program.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.